It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President of the United States is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors.
Perjurious, misleading, and untruthful.
Mr. Speaker, this is wrong, wrong, wrong.
The impeachment of a president. It had been tawdry and tortured, this becoming this.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
But it was really about truth and consequences.
I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false.
But they weren't.
The eyes have it.
Monica Lewinsky, a young White House intern, and the president had what was politely called inappropriate contact. He got into trouble for what he told investigators.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is. Yes.
The evidence suggests that the president repeatedly used the machinery of government and the powers of his high office to conceal his relationship.
The scandal divided the country.
A nation of laws cannot be ruled by a person who breaks the law.
When will this mindless cannibalism end? How many good public officials must be destroyed because of their private sins and human imperfections?
It paralyzed the presidency and made their private lives and foibles painfully public. It became about survival, so the Clintons circled the wagons and went on the offensive.
The great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
The impeachment hearings, live and in graphic detail, capped a year of this. The House voted to impeach, but the Senate did not convict. He's worked ever since to reclaim his reputation. She's run the marathon and has gained influence. But there will always be that history. And private lives will always be the quicksand of American politics.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's a CNN report. And isn't it amazing to hear CNN sound like that and talk about right and wrong and actually declare the president of the United States had lied under oath? I thought that was pretty amazing. And it really takes me back in time. That happened 18 years ago in... December of 1998, the House, the United States House of Representatives, voted to impeach the 34th President of the United States, 42nd President of the United States. And I had a front row seat to that, for better or for worse. Congressman Henry Hyde was the chairman of that Judiciary Committee. He was from Illinois, and I had known him for quite some time for a number of reasons. And in his capacity as head of that committee, he looked to another Chicagoan to be the chief investigative counsel. And interestingly enough, the man that he chose was a Democrat. He had a strong Democratic family. They'd been involved in Democratic politics in Chicago for years. But he was an honest man. He was an attorney. And so he stepped up to the plate and did something that was very controversial for a Democrat to do at that time. And he took on the prosecution of this case and the investigation of it. And his name is Dave Shippers. And when all of this has been breaking out, all of this news and all of this scandal resurfacing in various ways, I was looking back in time and I thought very much about my time spent with Congressman Hyde. I did the first interview with him after the impeachment was over. He came into my studio. He had not one, not two, but three full-time bodyguards because his life was in danger. And through Congressman Hyde, I met our next guest, who I had the privilege of also sitting with and talking to and just hearing from him firsthand about what had happened, what the evidence was. And so I tried to find him in Chicago, and I did. He's 87 years old. He is still practicing law. And he joins us this morning, David Shippers. Good morning, Mr. Shippers.
Good morning, Sandy.
So this, all of this news must have conjured up a ton of memories for you.
Oh, boy. Deja vu all over again.
Yeah.
Yes, it did. It brought back a lot of good memories and a lot of real bad memories.
You know, do you recall at all when Congressman Hyde reached out to you, what he said to you and what he tasked you to do? What was the mission that he called you to do?
Well, I know, you know, I received a call from Henry Hyde. I've known him for years, and he called me. The first time my secretary said, Henry Hyde's on the phone, I said, oh, man, not Henry. He's not going to ask for money. And so I didn't answer the phone. He called again, and this time he left a number. So I called the number back, and lo and behold, it was Henry Hyde, and he wasn't asking for money. He said, Dave, I'm going to ask your advice. You've been in Chicago. You've been an attorney for a long time. He said, give me a name of someone who is preferably a Democrat and who has a vast trial experience, and who is not afraid to take on a terrible, hard job, and who's willing to work with me. And I said, well, I'm not trying to be a wise guy, Henry, but you're describing me. And he says, I know. Are you interested? So that was long before the Lewinsky thing broke.
Really?
He asked me if I would come out with a team and do an investigation of the Department of Justice, because the committee had oversight power over the Department of Justice. I agreed. I looked all over the country for the best possible lawyers, the best possible investigators, and I was surprised to find that they were all from Chicago and were all good friends of mine. So I put the group together, and we went out to Washington. We did for months. We were doing an investigation of the Department of Justice and the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which was a part of it. And we came up with a lot of good stuff. But then suddenly, the Lewinsky thing hit very shortly after that. Now, before we went out there, the Lewinsky thing hit. And Henry called me back and he said, Dave, you know, I know you're willing to do an investigation of the Justice Department, but if, God forbid, and he said that, if, God forbid, Ken Starr sends over a recommendation for an impeachment, would you and your staff be willing to handle the investigation? And I said, well, I'm going to have to talk to my family. You know, I can't commit to that. My cousin was the Cook County chairman of the Democratic Party. He was a good friend of the people of Washington. So I sat down with my family, and the family was all for it. They said, by all means, go ahead. And then I sat down with Tommy, my cousin, and I said to him, look, here's what they want me to do. They want me to come out there, do an investigation of the Justice Department. But if we get a reference to impeach the president, they want me to handle it. Now, Tom, if this is going to embarrass you or cause you any problems at all, just say so, and I won't take the job. Tommy said, Dave, you've already called it as you see it. Take the job and Godspeed. So that was it. Next thing I know, we're out of Washington with my gang. And before we knew it, here comes the stuff from Ken Starr. It went into a secret room. It wasn't a secret room, but it was a locked, guarded room. The rules were that only members of the committee, not their staff, nobody else, only members of the committee had access to that room. They had to sign in and sign out. They could take nothing in with them, and they could bring nothing out with them. Well, when they announced that they had all the material in the room, I put my staff together. We all sat down, and I said, all right, look, if this is nothing Monica Lewinsky, if this is nothing but sex, we'll be out of here in a couple of weeks. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at everything. We're going to listen to everything. We're going to read every word. Each one of us is going to do it. There were some 60,000 documents in there. plus telephone calls, all kinds of stuff. So we went in, and 2 weeks later, after we had gone through everything, we again sat down, and I said, all right, I'm going to ask you one by one, what do you think? And one by one, they said, he's got to go. The man's a perjurer. He's done stuff. He's been after women. He's been doing everything in his power to shut everybody up. The man should be impeached. So I went to Henry Hyde and I said, we're going to recommend an impeachment inquiry.
Dave,
that's
who
when I gave.
Who prepared that information in that vault? Who did all that? Who gathered all that information that ended up in that locked room?
Ken Starr.
Oh, so
Ken
it was
Starr
his team.
His group put it all together.
Okay.
And they sent it over. And although they said it was a mistake, when we were going through all this material, we came across a very thin file on a woman named Juanita Broderick. I was the first one to read that, and I said, oh, my God. It had happened back in the 70s. So I immediately called the Attorney General of the state of Arkansas, and I said, what is the statute of limitations on rape? And he said, 5 years. So that was that, okay? We had no information that she had been in any way connected with what we were investigating, so we just set it aside. Although it was there for everybody to read. The rest of it, the real problem, Sandy, is that after the impeachment trial, they put all that stuff in executive session and put it into the archives. So everybody's mouth is clam shut. We can't talk about specifics of what's in there, although I will say this, 65 congressmen came over and looked at that stuff between the time of the impeachment and the time of the trial. The time when I gave my final argument and the time of the impeachment, we had something like a week and a half. And Henry Hyde opened it to anyone who wanted to come in. Any congressman who wanted to come in could come in there. 65 of them came in. 90 times, I would think, five times a day, a congressman would come in and say, Dave, you know, we're doing this for Henry, but I'm telling you right now, I'm not voting for impeachment. That's okay. Just take a look. And I remember one time, one of those men who said that to me, I saw him in the room. He had his head in his hands, and he was reading something. And he was just muttering, my God, how bad can it get? And of those 65, 64 ended up voting for impeachment once they saw what was in there. Now, I might add, not one senator, though it was open to all of them, not one senator came over and looked at that material. I think they didn't want to look at it because they were afraid of what they were going to find.
And so that information, you use the word into archives, so a lot of things are archived, but, you know, you can go look at them and pull them up. But this is sealed off so that no one, you're sworn to secrecy. You know what, David, hold that thought.
Yeah, we all are. And,
hold that thought.
It's hold that thought.
We have to take a break. So hold on just 1 second. We'll take this break and we'll come back and pick up with that because I think it's important. And I also remember very well Congressman Hyde sharing some things with me. He is no longer with us, and I'm certainly not held anything confidential. And I'm going to come back and talk about that. It's in just a second. This is Sandy Rios. My guest is David Shippers, who played such an important part in our history. And now it seems to be the story is revived. And we're going to tie this in to what's happening now with the presidential election. We'll do that in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Today, after our investigation, I've come to a point that frankly I prayed I would never reach. It is my sorrowful duty now to accuse President William Jefferson Clinton of obstruction of justice, false and deliberately misleading statements under oath, witness tampering, abuse of power, and false statements to and obstruction of the Congress of the United States in the course of this very impeachment inquiry.
18 years ago, that was our guest. He was the chief investigative counsel for the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on the impeachment of William Jefferson Clinton. And Dave Shippers, now again, still practicing law at 87 in Chicago, is with us this morning. And so let me just recap a few things that you just told us, Dave. You said that there was a vault of information on President Clinton, and it was sealed off, only available to members of Congress, not their staff. You said 65 members of Congress went in to look at it, most of them saying they were just doing it out of respect for Congressman Hyde. They were not going to vote for impeachment. Could I just say it was risky for them then to do that? And then we have to also add how risky it was for you. As a Democrat from Chicago to do this job, it was an amazing act of courage on your part. And yet you did it. You prosecuted the case, the information faithfully to that committee. 65 congressmen looked at it. Of the 65, 64, we think, voted to impeach. And then when it moved to the Senate, not a single senator went in to look at the evidence. I remember Congressman Hyde coming to the studio right after this. I always say, David, this is like when you have a kid who goes to camp, and you know as a mother, the best time to is you have to pick them up and let them get in the car because they're full of stories. They tell you the best stuff when they just got off the bus. You don't want to wait 24 hours. And I feel that way about you and about Congressman Hyde, that I had the privilege of hearing your story when it was fresh. And so Congressman Hyde said to me, you were talking about Juanita Broderick. He told me during a commercial break, I'll never forget, he was shocked at the brutal rape of Juanita Broderick by then governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton. He told me that he had raped her twice, not once, but twice. And I think Juanita now has made that public. And by the way, could I say, Michael Isikoff now is saying, he was the lead reporter for NBC on the Juanita Broderick story.
I remember that.
And he is now saying that NBC is sitting on this tape of Juanita Broderick, where they actually edited out the part where she talks about how Hillary threatened her. And Michael Isikoff is calling for NBC to play that full tape. So we'll see what happens with that. But David,
don't hold your breath.
In terms of your investigation and what you came across, at what point did it intersect the life of the First Lady? Was anything in that room about her, any part of your investigation about her behavior as a result of this?
I can't talk about what's in the room, but I can talk about what I know from our investigation.
Okay.
She was all over it. She was the one who was orchestrating all the attacks on the people that she called the bimbos. There was another bimbo eruption, so let's go and destroy them. I talked to every one of those, quote, bimbos, unquote, and they were decent, honorable, good women, all of whom had been in some way either threatened or attacked directly. And I'll tell you something. But at one point, somebody said to me, my God, how evil is that guy, Clinton? And I said, no, he's kind of a buffoon. He just can't control himself. But if you want to talk about real evil, it's her. And it was a terrible time, I'll tell you that.
Jim, why do you say that, David? I mean, why do you feel that way? See, this is what gets confusing now. People think by bringing this up that was President Clinton bad, you know, not good, but that Mrs. Clinton is the one running for president, so it's irrelevant. Why in your mind is it relevant?
She was the one that did everything to destroy the women. She was the one that, even before the Whitewater thing should have been enough to teach everyone. Remember, Hillary Clinton invested $100 a when she was her husband was the governor, $100 in the commodities market, and lo and behold, it turned into $100,000 in a couple of weeks. Wow! I wish I could do that. Now, that, Sandy, in my opinion, is a precursor to what happened when she was the Secretary of State. If you give me money, you get anything you want.
Yeah. So there are so many avenues of her corruption. There's no question about it. You mentioned to me on the phone the other day when you and I were talking a name that I have not heard come up in this cycle of regurgitating all this horrible stuff, and that was the Dolly Kyle Browning, who was a childhood friend of Bill Clinton's.
Yeah.
And she's actually talked a lot about Mrs. Clinton. First of all, tell us, because this is all new information. These are young people who've never heard these stories. Who was Dolly Kyle Browning, and what did you learn from her?
All right. Dolly Kyle Browning would have been my first witness in the Senate. She knew Bill Clinton, or Billy as she called him, when she was 12 and he was 13 years old. They grew up together. They had their relationship was constant, intimate and constant. At times, it became sexual in nature. But she knew where all the bodies were buried. And she opened up to us and told us the whole story. Now, one of the key cases against Mr. Clinton was perjury committed in connection with Dolly Kyle Browning. They had a high school reunion, and she and Billy, as she said, sat down and started talking. And she said, "Look, Billy, I'm writing a book. I won't say anything bad about you if you don't start trashing me." And that was essentially the conversation. She came out publicly and made that statement, and lo and behold, Clinton came out with a piece of paper on which he said, immediately after that, I wrote down exactly what we talked about. And one of his toadies in the White House signed another affidavit, or signed that affidavit saying, I was standing immediately behind them. I heard every word they said, and what the president says is the true story. Now, Dolly, when I faced Dolly with that, she said, Dave, we were sitting in front of a 6-foot square pillar. Nobody could have been behind us. And so I figured, here we go. You know, now the first thing I had to do was to make sure I knew that the Secret Service was there and that they were watching everything, and they were obviously not going to let the president out of their sight. So I reached out. Actually, I sent out subpoenas to Secret Service agents who were on that duty. And I received a call from one of the finest Secret Service agents I've ever known, a man by the name of John Libinati. He's now out. He resigned shortly thereafter. He called me and he said, Dave, let me ask you this. He said, why do you need this? And I told him. I said, I don't need their testimony. I don't need anything. I don't want Secret Service agents to get on the stand and say, Dolly's lying. All I want to know is, you know, am I safe in going with this perjury? And he says, oh, my God, you know, you can't, you know, I'm not their favorite person because I was the one who backed Linda Tripp when they had that brouhaha. So I knew I was talking to a guy that was a decent man. And about 3 days later, he called me back. And he said, will you do me a personal favor? And I said, anything you want, John, what? He said, withdraw those subpoenas. He didn't say a word about anything, but in my mind, when he said that, I felt, okay, the Secret Service they will not double cross us. So I withdrew the subpoenas, and that was the end. I never called a Secret Service agent to the stand. That's when I added the charge of perjury in the matter where he turned that document over during the deposition, and I think he turned it over to the committee. It was dead bang written perjury with a of ordination of perjury connected with it.
But that was not one of the charges that was that charge. There were several charges against Clinton, and only two ended up sticking, correct?
Right. Only while the debate was going on, Jim Rogan from California, a decent human being.
I remember interviewing him.
He came up to me and he said, "Dave, if you get one or two, which one is the most important?" Now, I knew that the abuse of power, they were not going to go along with that. So I said, get me the obstruction of justice. If you impeach him on obstruction of justice, that opens up the can of worms for everything. Well, they did. They got him on obstruction of justice and I think one count of perjury. We would have... Let me tell you one... I don't know if you know this, but right before we went into the Senate, a female reporter, I cannot recall her name, but she called me and she said, "Mr. Shippers, have you ever heard of Juanita Broderick?" And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "Well, I want to tell you something. You should send somebody down there to talk to her because I interviewed her. I've got an interview in the can ready to air it." And she was raped. There's no question about it. So I got one of my investigators, a Chicago police woman who had worked in rape counseling, and one of my attorneys, and I asked them to go down to Arkansas and interview Juanita Broderick. Well, they went down there and they came back and they told me that when they went in there to talk to her, it was at her lawyer's office. And her lawyer said she's not going to talk to anybody. But Diana Wozniacki, the police officer, said to me, then Juanita looked at me like, you know, please, I want to talk. So they called me and said, what should we do? And I said, well, give her a call. Just ask her or let it be known. Don't talk to her. Just leave a message. If you want to talk, call this number. She called back and she opened up completely. The two of them sat there, and when they came back, I sat them down, and the only one that I was interested in was Diana's reaction, and I said, Diana, you've been doing rape counseling for years. What is your opinion of Juanita Broderick? And she said, she is the most classic case of a rape victim that I have ever talked to.
You know, Dave, the other thing that we should interject, because you have this in common with Juanita, she was a Democrat. She was working on Clinton's campaign. She was a loyalist. It wasn't like she was...
So was Willie, Kathleen Willie.
Kathleen Willie. That's right.
She worked like all the way for his election. And then when she went into the local office, but her husband disappeared and she had no means of income, that's when he groped her and all that stuff. And I tell you, the Kathleen Willie tale... She was a terrified woman.
And she claims that her life was threatened. She's claimed that her animals were, I don't know if they were killed or threatened. They were killed.
First thing that happened was she came out one day after she got the subpoena to testify. She came out one day and her cat was laying dead on the front porch. And not of natural causes. I won't go into what happened. A little while later, a jogger comes jogging by while she was out in the yard, and he says, "Oh, you're Kathleen Willie, aren't you?" She says, "Yes, I am." And he says, "How are your two children?" And he named them. Oh. And she said, "Well, they're fine. Why?" He says, "Well, just asking," and away he went. The third time, here comes the jogger again, and he came up to her and he said, "Have you decided not to testify?" And she says, "No, I'm going to testify." And he says, "You know, you're just not getting the message, are you? You better be careful and watch your back." That's when she became very terrified. And it turns out, by the way, that the jogger was a guy that was sent out there by Hillary.
Okay, so there, that's the answer to my question. See, we could talk... We could talk about William Jefferson Clinton and the shocking behavior. By the way, Congressman Hyde told me there was stuff in that vault that went all the way back to his time at Oxford. We haven't heard anything about what happened when he was overseas. But the relevant parts of this, it is still relevant in the sense that if he's going to be back in the White House, that's a crime in itself, that he should find himself back in the White House. But the most important thing, is the implication of Mrs. Clinton and her treatment. She's supposed to be the champion of women, after all. She is the first woman president, she hopes. And she's been championing women for years. She's done all these marvelous things for women, except maybe not. All right, my guess is...
Yeah, championing women.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk to Kathleen Willey. Talk to Dolly Kyle. Yeah.
Talk to
any one of them.
Yeah,
and
we're going to...
They were not terrified of Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
they were terrified of her.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back, Dave, and talk about the relevance today. I'd love to know your perspective on how you would compare this with all that's being reported about Donald Trump and how we should feel about that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Distinguished Counsel, President, and Senators, you are now stewards of the oath. Its significance in public service and our cherished system of justice will never be the same after this. Depending on what you decide, it will either be strengthened in its power to achieve justice, or it will go the way of so much of our moral infrastructure and become a mere convention full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
That was the voice of Congressman Henry Hyde as he opened the proceedings in the Senate. That was a quote from Shakespeare. I remember we used to play that on my show over and over again. These were very dark days. And I have to say, the successful impeachment of Bill Clinton in the House was a victory because it was right. It was just. But when the Senate took it over, and I remember Chief Justice William Rehnquist in his robes, he was presiding, very serious about the whole thing. And then I remembered the foolish behavior of the senators, who you just heard Dave Shippers describe. Not a single senator went to read the evidence, not a single one. The proceeding was over. I don't even know how long. It was over quickly. And I think Chief Justice Rehnquist was surprised. He gaveled it closed, and Trent Locke took over on the Senate floor and acted as though it had been a rotary meeting. I will never forget that. Dave Shippers, what was your reaction? Were you in that Senate chamber when that happened?
I was in on a number of meetings with Democrats and Republicans with the leadership in the Senate. And I remember specifically one that I will never forget. We were in there with three Democrats and three Republicans. One Republican was very vociferous. And the first thing was Henry Hyde said, well, we're asking that Mr. Shippers be our attorney and that he put the witnesses on. And Senator Biden, who is now the vice president, said, no way is that guy going to open his mouth in the Senate. Henry told me later, I said, what do you have against me? And he says, he heard what you said in the House, that he wasn't going to have that happen in the Senate. Oh, now, the meeting goes on, and Henry's asking for to be able to put on witnesses and saying, this guy is really bad, you know. And one of the Republican senators said, Henry, no matter what happens, I don't care what happens, you're never going to get 67 votes. And I raised my hand at that point. No. Henry Hyde said, if you go over there, Dave has information that the president committed a brutal rape. And this same senator said, I don't care if you can prove that he raped a woman and stood up and shot her dead. You're not going to get 67 votes. Well, I raised my hand, which I was prone to do it wrong very various times, and I said, Senator, may I ask a question? He says, yeah, what? I said, yesterday I saw 100 senators raise their right hand to God and swear to do equal and impartial justice. Are they going to ignore their vow too? And he said, you're right, they are. And I said, well, then the system doesn't work. And that was that. We knew
Dave,
that.
Can you tell us who that senator was?
Senator Stevens from Alaska. He's dead now, God rest his soul.
Yep, and so is Congressman Hyde, we should say, in case people don't know that. Our mutual good friend, Congressman Henry Hyde, is gone. But he really fought such a battle on this. And as you said,
he was the bravest man. He and Jim Rogan were the two bravest men that I have ever met. And I've met a lot of brave men.
That's saying a lot. All right, so Dave, before our time together ends, because of your wisdom, again, could I say, hope you don't mind me saying this, but I think it's impressive that you are 87 years old. Your mind is as sharp as it was 18 years ago when I interviewed you, and you have done a great service to your country, and your own courage in this whole thing is remarkable. But I want us to touch on, so with that in mind, look, we have a confusing situation now. We have an election going on. We have all of this passed to Bill Clinton. We have the attempt by Hillary Clinton to destroy the women, not to protect them, but to destroy them. But we also then have all of these stories coming out about Donald Trump. So some are saying, well, look, Donald Trump is no different than Bill Clinton. So why are you conservatives so outraged, you know, at Bill Clinton, but you don't care about what happened with Donald Trump? How would you distinguish the circumstances, or would you?
Well, I wouldn't distinguish it, but as I'll tell you, originally when I heard about the first two women coming out, I said to my wife, here we go. This is the same thing they did. Remember, they outed one of the speakers of the House. They outed Henry Hyde on a 35-year-old thing. And this is exactly, that's how they operate. If they can't kill you, if they can't hurt you, they'll discredit you. I don't know if these women are telling the truth or not. If they're telling the truth, obviously Trump is similar. And I say similar, not exactly alike. Because even if these things are true, that he touched someone or he kissed someone or something like that, he wasn't the president of the United States. He was an individual, a human being with an immortal soul who is inclined to do goofy things. But the difference is Clinton was the president of the United States. And I will say this, if Hillary Clinton is elected president, this country's through. It's all over.
You mentioned Dolly Kyle Browning again, and you said you've kept in touch with her. Did she have any insights since she had known Bill Clinton since they were 12 and 13?
Sandy, I will call Dolly Kyle Browning tomorrow, and I'll ask her to call you.
Okay, that's
and
great.
You talk to her. You decide.
All right.
She knows everything, and it's worth having her tell you about the first time she met Hillary. It's one of the. Not only is it funny, it's hilarious. And remember, this is a woman who was as close to them as anybody in the world. And she's got stories that will knock you on your ear. She wrote a book very recently called Hillary, the Other Woman. And it's well worth reading.
So I wonder how old she is. She's probably in her 70s.
Yeah, she's getting up there in the paints.
In Arkansas, yeah.
But she's in North Carolina now. She's no longer in Arkansas. So when she called me the last time, and she said, I'm in North Carolina, Dave. And I said, well, you got out of that hole.
she
would make a great, you could talk to her forever.
Well, then
and
I would.
And if you let her go, she'll talk forever.
Well, we might let her talk for 45 minutes, but beyond that, we might have to play a commercial break. But no, that I'll take you up on that. That would be great. So,
all right, I will contact Dolly.
You know, Dave. So
off the air, give me your number there.
Yes, I will.
I can have her call.
I surely will. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the show when Congressman Hyde, you know, he used to come in and be my guest frequently when I was on air in Chicago. And one of the things, one of the reasons our lives intersected, Dave, was I had a severely disabled child. And she eventually lived in a home called Markland Home out in the western suburbs. And Congressman Hyde was such a strong supporter of Markland and of all issues. You know, he is the, I don't need to tell you, he's the author of the Hyde Amendment, which made it impossible for federal dollars to be spent on abortion. He was a champion for life. I have a beautiful picture of him pushing my daughter in a wheelchair.
Oh, God, love him.
So that's how I know Congressman Hyde. So, but after this happened, this impeachment, well, as soon as it was completed, when he came into the studio, he had three bodyguards. Remember one of the Baldwin brothers, Alec?
There were three policemen from the Capitol Police who guarded him at all times.
Because remember, Alec Baldwin said that Henry Hyde should be killed, his family should be killed. He said that on television. It was unbelievable.
There were people, I mean, you know, people would, you should see some of the letters we got. You know, most of them were very favorable. But every once in a while, we get one written in crayon. You should have a terrible Christmas and a rotten New Year. I mean, that's what we faced.
Were you afraid for your own life?
When we were coming out of the Senate, there were two things that I have to tell you. One, when we were coming out of the Senate, I said to Henry, you know, it's really bad. Not only did we lose, but the people of the country hate our guts. And he said, Dave, don't ever underestimate the people of the United States. We then walked out into the rotunda, all of us, Henry Hyde leading, and the place was packed because they knew there was going to be the vote that day. And as we walked out, they started to clap. And by the time Henry got to the middle of the rotunda, everybody was clapping. The policemen, everybody in that rotunda. We got to the other side and they said, Henry, I see what you mean. And the other one is when Henry Hyde was put in the Hyde Amendment, he was interviewed on television. And they said something about it. He said, human life is sacred. It is sacred. And the moderator, whoever it was, said, well, Mr. Hyde, what about victims of rape and incest? And he said, a baby is a baby is a baby. I don't care how he becomes a baby. He is life and he is sacrosanct. That's the type of man I went out there for.
When you left and came back to Chicago, did you fear for your life? Did you have to have guards at your law office? And how did your life proceed after that?
No, as a matter of fact, when I came back on the plane, I was going up the steps, up the escalator at O'Hare, and I heard a voice behind me say, excuse me, sir, are you Mr. Shippers? And I turned around, ready to fight. And it was a young man. He had a little boy and a little baby in his arm. And I said, yes, I am. Why? And he said, I just want to thank you, not only on my behalf, but on behalf of my little boy. And that was the reaction I got when I got back to Chicago. I talked to people who were politicians who obviously would never say a good word for the Republicans. They would tell me privately, Dave, God bless you. He had to go. He's ruining our party.
I was terrified
in Washington, as was my wife, Jackie. But once we crossed the Potomac into Virginia, I said, you know, it even seems cleaner here, doesn't it? And she said, absolutely.
I know exactly what you mean because I live here now. There is such a tremendous amount of evil in this city. And I do think it all goes back to evil. Even people that don't believe in God would have to admit that there is something really bad going on and coming out of here. You know, it's interesting, Dave, because so many people think that, when it's true, there's a lot of bad stuff in Chicago, but there's so many good people who believe in God and believe in right and wrong and justice. You're one of them.
I'll tell you how it was. One time I was walking down 14th Street toward a tavern where all my guys were waiting for me. And just as I got to 14th and maybe Well, I was on 16th, and I came to like 2nd Avenue Northwest. Here comes a motorcade around the corner from the White House. I ducked into a doorway, and I watched that motorcade closely, and if a gun had come out of one of those windows, I would have been dead. That's how I felt. Everywhere I went, we had people watching us.
If you had,
we never went to or from anywhere unless it was all of us.
Now, if you had it to do over again, would you do it again?
I'd do it in a heartbeat.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll tell you something. While in that frame of reference, I could probably name 15 occasions on which President Obama committed impeachable offenses and should have been impeached.
So we need you back here in Washington to make that case. But there's a story for another interview for us. Dave, I'm so honored. Thank you so much.
I'm honored. I'm honored to talk to you and your listeners, because you are the people that we have to rely on. Get out and vote in the name of God.
Yeah, absolutely. Get out and vote, because we don't want this repeated in any form or fashion. By the way, Dave's book is called Sellout, The Inside Story of President Clinton's Impeachment, where he wrote right after it happened. Dave Shippers, Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.